Welcome to the Project Zion podcast. This podcast explores the unique spiritual and theological gifts Community of Christ offers for today's world.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to another episode of the Project Zion podcast. I'm your host, Brittany Mangelson, and today I am really excited for this episode because we are interviewing one of my dear friends, Sue Robb. Now, Sue Robb is a member of the Catholic Church who lives in Blue Springs, Missouri, which is a suburb of Independence, Missouri. And how I know Sue is we were in Community of Christ Seminary together. I actually should say are in Community of Christ Seminary together because we haven't quite graduated. And Sue has just brought such a wealth of culture and of theology and understanding and just a wisdom with her to the seminary program. And so I wanted to get her on the podcast and talk about some of the things that she is doing in her own spiritual journey and in her own faith tradition, because she's doing really awesome things. So Sue, thank you for joining us today.
You're welcome. I'm glad to be here.
So let's just talk about your background. I'm pretty sure you grew up Catholic, but then I realized I actually don't know. So just give our listeners a little bit of your background of, you know, how faith and religion formed and shaped your life growing up.
Okay. I was born a cradle Catholic, or I am a cradle Catholic. And my family traveled around a lot. My dad was in the Air Force, so we did a lot of moving around, and my parents weren't really deeply involved in church, but they did attend faithfully. And then as we settled down in St. Louis for my high school years, got a little bit more involved in church, but I ended up marrying an atheist, which was not my parents' ideal vision for their daughter. But in doing so, I kind of went away from the church for about 13 years. And not feeling in my teens and 20s, you know, actually not feeling I needed the church, feeling kind of like it didn't have anything for me. So we moved out to the West Coast, my husband and I, and started going through the incredibly stressful world of infertility, and were not able to have kids or anything. And so it was a hard time in terms of not having any faith, not having any family out there, and then not feeling like I could be like the rest of the world. So we started trying to have kids through all kinds of different things, different ways and different procedures. And it was about 1991, I guess, my dad got suddenly sick and died. And the only place that I knew to go back to was the Catholic Church, because I needed something spiritual. And so I went back there and just basically sat in church and cried most of the time. It was about a year after he died. Once again, we were still going through this infertility nightmare, that I decided I was going to come back to church, never on the weekends when all the families were there. But I would go during the week because we do have daily mass at the church, and started during Lent. And after going through Lent, after 6 weeks of going, I told God that I was back. And with no interventions, a month later, I was pregnant with my son. So that is my miracle. That is my strongest faith journey to date. And it is one that has been kind of formed my foundation and how this journey is continuing to unfold.
Wow. Thank you for sharing that.
Yeah. So anyway, I made that promise to God, and I promised God that since I was away from the church for 13 years, I would say yes to anything God placed before me in the church. And so that really, we moved back here to Blue Springs after being on the West Coast for those 13 years. And I just started volunteering. I pushed my son in a stroller, and he was about less than a year old, and said, I'm here to volunteer, and I'll do whatever you need me to do as long as I can do it with my son. So volunteered for a couple of years and then started working in the church as a teacher. I had an education degree and started teaching kindergarten in the church, and pretty much have been there ever since. Just kept on saying yes. And that yes has led me to the most amazing places that I never would have even imagined. So
Thank you. When I interrupted you, I was just going to ask what that experience did to your faith. You know, how did that experience turn into action? But it sounds like what you just said, that you decided to continually say yes to God. So I'm curious if there are any interesting or unexpected places that that your yes to God has taken you.
I feel it's been, I love the song by Stephen Curtis Chapman, Glorious Unfolding, because it has been just like that. It's been a glorious unfolding. I believe my yeses have brought me to seminary and brought me to this point tonight. And it is one of those, that foundational experience showed me the faith, that having faith and trusting, it's always going to be okay. And was a good thing for me to learn back then. And it's been one of those tenets that I've carried with me throughout my adult life, raising my kids and such. So it's just that saying yes and seeing where that leads, because totally trusting that God's gonna be there.
That's a beautiful and terrifying thought. Just knowing that if you say yes, that maybe the yeses will get bigger or scarier or more expansive or maybe smaller. And how do all of those situations that present themselves, how do they fit into your life?
I think there is some level of discernment. It's just, it's not like saying yes when you're in college to whatever your friend throws at you. It's just this saying yes to God. And that, I think, is different than saying yes to earthly things that pull us away from God. So, discerning whether or not it is of God and from God, and it's something that I would be proud to bring to the light versus anything in the darkness. And I think that is where that yes, that it is going to be something that God is going to accompany us through.
Yeah, and I think that with that, hopefully, ideally, our saying yes should fall into this place of holistic balance and a holy rhythm. And, saying yes doesn't mean just literally saying yes to everything, even if there are good opportunities or, good ministries that come your way, that you still have to find that life balance that is going to work for you. So, and I think exactly. That God in that too.
Yeah. Yeah. I think God guides that process and puts it out there for us. And, once again, that free will, that choice to say yes or no, is always ours.
Yeah, exactly. So one thing that I was surprised and delighted to find out about you is that my friend Chris Judd. I hear that you did some spiritual formation with Chris Judd. And so I'm wondering about that process. I should have done a little bit more research before we met, but I don't exactly know what program it was that you did, or what the end result was with that. But I, have a hunch that is maybe what introduced you to Community of Christ. So why don't you just tell us about that story?
Okay. Yeah. So the program that I met Chris through was called Sojourners, and Sojourners is a spiritual direction formation program offered by the Benedictine nuns in Atchison, Kansas. And it's a 3-year program and 2 years of kind of monthly class meetings, a week in the summer of an intensive, and then the third year is a practicum. So I met Chris through that program, and she was a leader throughout. I mean, just absolutely, totally welcoming and engaging everyone, never leaving anybody out. And so that was really my first exposure to somebody of Community of Christ. And love that woman. She's amazing.
I agree. So tell me a little bit more about this program. I'm really interested in spiritual formation. I semi-sort of toyed around with doing Community of Christ spiritual formation program. I would love to do it at some point in my life. The timing was just a little intense because it's starting right now. So right on the tail ends of seminary was a little too much of a commitment for me. But I want to hear about your program. What kinds of things did you learn? What did you study? What experiences did you have, etc.?
It was the spiritual direction formation program. It's, you know, when you hear the phrase spiritual director, a lot of people have the misunderstanding that somebody is going to tell me what to do so I can be closer to God. And that is not the way this program forms directors. Basically, the wisdom is within each person. And so if I tell somebody that God wants you to read the Bible more, or God wants you to do whatever, that is not, that is me and my bias. That is me and my opinion. That is not God. A spiritual director allows space for God to show up, and through the directee talking and the spiritual director listening, we can ask questions that will evoke that presence, that Holy Spirit within that person. It's an amazing process to observe. It is an amazing aha moment whenever we hear ourselves speak and realize that neither of us concocted that was the Spirit coming through. So it's kind of, like I say, an amazing formation program. We learned a lot about the different spiritualities: creation spirituality, Ignatian spirituality, Celtic spirituality. We did a lot of discernment of Enneagrams, knowing kind of our own personalities and knowing how those can be strengths. And there are weaknesses to that too, or ways that keep us from being the full person. Met monthly and for about 28 hours. It was time for reflection. It was time to practice being a spiritual director. It was time to practice listening. It is holy listening is what this spiritual direction is all about. It is about listening with the ear of your heart, which is part of the Benedictine theology. And so when we turn off our minds and our judgments, and we do move down to that heart space and listen, then that is where that quiet voice, that whisper of the Holy Spirit is present. And that can be, like I say, one of those powerful experiences, spiritual experiences that people can have.
That sounds really beautiful and truthfully very beneficial and needed in the world today. I know that a lot of people in my generation are moving away from organized religion, but they still want that sense of spiritual groundedness or meditation, some form of spiritual formation in their own lives. And so those skills that I assume were taught, that I know were taught, because I know you and Chris, you know, I think that is a big way that we can heal the world is through spiritual formation and holy listening. And like you said, setting aside our minds and our judgment and just really connecting on a human level.
It's been powerful to receive and to give. And once you receive it, you want to be able to share that, I think, with other people. And it is a healing ministry, I think, in many, many ways.
Yeah, beautiful, beautiful. So let's move into seminary a little bit, if that's all right.
Yes.
You and I have just basically finished a Community of Christ seminary program. So I'm curious to know what made you want to go to seminary and why did you choose Community of Christ seminary? And then maybe just talk about your experience with the seminary a little bit.
Okay. Well, I started, I was exposed to chaplaincy, and when my mother was dying, her last week on earth was spent at a hospice house. And that was the first time I had really been exposed to the work of chaplain. And from that whole week, as I watched and grieved and shared all of this, I thought, this is what I want to do with the rest of my life, is I want to be a chaplain. So, and work within a hospice situation. So I signed up and did a unit of clinical pastoral education to learn to be a chaplain. And that first unit basically told me that even though I'd had a master's in education, I needed some sort of theology degree to become a board certified chaplain. So as I was starting to do my second unit, there was a glitch in the paperwork and I was not able to complete that second unit. But there was this really odd sense of peace because I just knew God was up to something. And so I thought, okay, well, maybe this is an opportunity for me to go back to school and get some theology. Well, I started applying to Creighton, and this was in August, and there were lots of hoops. I had to get all my transcripts. There would have been a 9-month delay in starting, would have had to spend a month or so up there for the next 3 years. So the logistics were difficult too. And then somebody had mentioned, have you heard of Community of Christ Seminary, a chaplain that I know here in town? And I had never heard of Graceland. I'd heard of Graceland, but I didn't really know anything about it. Didn't know anything about really Community of Christ, except the hospitality and the kindness of Chris Judd. And so I looked on the website on a Friday and put in an application and was pretty much accepted by that following Wednesday, and classes started 2 weeks later. So I knew once again that God had really stopped that chaplaincy so I could engage in this degree, so I can become a board certified chaplain. And actually yesterday I started my second unit of chaplaincy. So with seminary behind me, it's a good thing. And it's also like, I know the freight train and I'm right in front of it, but that's another story. So I started Graceland and not really knowing anything other than, oh my gosh, this is exactly, everything just fell into place. So once again, it was saying yes to something that wasn't Creighton, that wasn't Catholic. In fact, one of my goals in my first unit of CPE was to gain a better understanding of other faith traditions, because I had been so embedded in the Catholic faith because I worked for the church and my kids went to school and at the Catholic school. And I really had no clue how we were alike or how we were different. So I used that learning goal, and I thought, this is really perfect to go to a non-Catholic seminary. I can have this experience of Protestant traditions and beliefs. So that's when we met online for the first time, and that's when we started. So also knew that Tony received his PhD from Marquette, which was a Catholic university, and I'm pretty sure he knows more about my faith than I do. But really, all of our professors' depth of knowledge has been such a rich, rich experience for me, because they're so articulate and so well-versed in Christianity as a whole. So really what I gained was a lot of freedom. I lost my misconceptions about, just Protestantism and Community of Christ. I had a friend recently said, you are so much more open and relaxed in terms of what I believe now, which is really, I thought, quite a nice compliment. And the fact that is something that other people are noticing, Catholics are noticing. So yeah, it's been one of the best experiences of my journey.
And just to throw a fun little note in there, the last focus session we had a really van. Sue was a taxi driver, and our friend Ben Joshua from India was in our van, and who else? Sally was in there, Kathy Fallon.
And Kathy, the air conditioning worked, and it was in Missouri, and
Oh, it was so fun just driving around, and we had a blast. Sue's great.
I enjoyed it, but it was an adventure, that's for sure.
So another thing that I wanted to talk to you about, Sue, is you just recently got a new job. If I remember right, right before the last focus session, this last May, that you got the job. So I want you to talk about it a little bit, because I think it's really exciting.
Okay. I had been a teacher in the Catholic school for 15 years, worked as a youth minister, which was another one of those God things, because that job allowed me the flexibility to do seminary, and something I did not really want to do, but I thought, there's a reason this is happening, so I'm going to go ahead and say yes. But then I started applying around and was hired by St. Francis Xavier, and I'm the Pastoral Associate for Justice and Life. And St. Francis Xavier is Kansas City's only Jesuit parish, and it's in the heart of South Kansas City. Been around about 110 years and is situated on a road that has historically been, and actually still is, a pretty much a racial dividing line in Kansas City. So we've got some very wealthy university professors And we've got some very, very poor people who are just struggling to break cycle of poverty. So as the Pastoral Associate for Justice and Life, I supervise a pretty robust food pantry. We serve about 200 people a month. We help them with transportation, provide bus passes. We help people get birth certificates and ID cards because Missouri has recently required people to have a photo ID, which if you don't have a card and you don't have money, you can't really, you don't have a need for a photo ID. So trying to get them registered to vote. We're doing some migrant and refugee assistance. We have a sustainability committee that is addressing some environmental issues. We lobby our representatives and senators on bills that are coming up in the in their various jurisdictions and such. And we basically educate people on justice issues. We're just finishing a study on Pope Francis's second encyclical, Laudato Si, and trying to see how we can apply the teachings to reduce our carbon footprint and our impact. We have a community garden. We do interfaith work. Christian, Muslim, and Jewish people work with Habitat for Humanity. And we build or refurbish one house a year. It's called the House of Abraham because Abraham is one of those characters in all three faith traditions. And we do Christmas baskets for food insecure people. So it's pretty diverse in terms of what I'm kind of working with, but it is so rich and so the potential is so high to help people. So I'm really, really excited to be doing this kind of work. It fits right into everything that has unfolded so far. And and I'm able to once again also do chaplaincy on the side. So that's been a rich blessing too.
So if you could have seen me, Sue, as you were describing all that, my jaw just kept dropping like more open and wider and wider and wider, because that's a lot. I mean, there are nonprofits or churches that just do one of the things you mentioned, and you mentioned at least a dozen huge ministries. I mean, huge, massive responsibilities. So I just want to know, how does it all work, or how do you manage everything or take care of yourself in the midst of all of that? Or I don't know. I'm fascinated.
Well, it's not all me. That title of my job, we have a lot of people. I mean, basically St. Francis Xavier is made up of pretty well-educated, liberal, baby boomer hippies who want to make a difference, who are retired, who have the ability to do this kind of work, both financially and in their time. So when I did my interview, they said, we are not a one issue parish. We cover the whole thing. Part of it is Jesuit theology. And part of it is their focus on Catholic social teaching. So we basically don't say we can't do that. We find a way. We go more. Magis is one of the Jesuit core values. What more can we do? What more can we do? And I've seen this ever since I started at the, people have that ingrained desire to do more and to, unite with people who are in need to better their lives, to, to help and to reach out to the people in our community and in, Kansas City and also, around the world who really do have some serious struggles. And we just want to be a voice. We want to be there in whatever way we can.
So what's the community's response to your parish? Do you get a lot of volunteers from the community? Do you partner with other churches or what's all that like?
We serve poor members of our community. Basically, we start with our zip code and then we branch out as we have funds, to help. We do a lot with the birth certificates and ID cards are huge. They're not very expensive, so we can help a broader range of people. But I have people coming to me saying, I want to address this issue. And so my job is just to help facilitate that. Another one is Grandparents Against Gun Violence. That's another one that is just getting started, that people are saying, this has gone too far. This is too much. We need to change. So they are real activists, the people that attend this church. And it is, I think, because it is Jesuit, because it is a different type of Catholicism that focuses more on the, like I said, the core values of humanity and of people. And it's a part of the church that people want to support, and they feel like they are able to be the hands and feet of Christ and to be church to somebody else.
That's beautiful. And really, that's what it's all about. I will say that in our last seminary class that we took, we studied a book that went over some of the Jesuit principles and theology and leadership styles. And that was by far, and I can't stress this enough, that was by far my favorite section of that class. And one of the crowning points of the whole program. Like when I think of all the textbooks that we've collected over the last 2 years, that book is the one that I will probably read again. It's just beautiful. It really is, like you said, living your church, being the hands and feet of Jesus. It's not just showing up in a pew on Sunday and then leaving and forgetting about it. It's actually living out what we see patterned in the New Testament and making a difference in the world, which is remarkable. And I'm just completely floored at all of the different things that you and your parish and the leadership and the community are able to accomplish together. That sounds absolutely amazing. I want to come visit sometime. It sounds absolutely beautiful.
Yeah, it's a different way of church for me. The church that I was at for so long was very conservative and didn't feel like I could speak up. Here it is, you know, there is equality, there is justice, there is just a huge sense of community and Christ and the way I think Jesus would like what we're doing. So I hope at least. And actually, Chris Lowney is coming to Rockhurst in a couple of months. The guy who wrote, so I've sent a note over there to see, if I can come over and hear his talk. It's for Rockhurst University, but I think they'll let us in. I'm eager to hear him speak.
Yeah, very nice. That's the author of the book I mentioned.
Right, Heroic Leadership. Yeah.
Yes, 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 yes. I couldn't remember the title. We've read a lot of books.
I hate you.
So I'm wondering, Sue, through this job and your association with this new parish, what have you learned about the nature of God through your service with them?
Through my 3 months that I've been with them, I mean, God is, that's a huge question. You know, I think God is present in every way we can possibly see. God is present in the food. God is present in the people we serve, in the volunteers. God is present in the Eucharist that we receive that strengthens us and nourishes us. And I think, I don't know that I've learned that, but I see it so much more vividly now. The Ignatians are really big on the spiritual exercises, and they look at going deeper and going into almost not an imaginative, not making stuff up, but imagining yourself in the situation. So whenever we hear a reading on the weekend, we bring Jesus right into that, and we bring ourselves right into that reading. And it's allowed me to see God in a much richer way.
It sounds like, and I don't want to put theology in your mouth or whatever, you know, to say what you once used to believe, but it sounds like, putting it into my perspective, how I used to really believe that God was a literal man on a cloud somewhere that was kind of dictating the universe. Seems like you are finding God in the everyday and in people and in experiences and this really grounded, rooted, experiential God, which I think is transformative and really beautiful.
It is, you know, and I think, you know, I've been able to see God working in different ways throughout the life, but just, I guess the word vivid is the word that comes to mind. It is so much crisper and clearer. And I've used the word abundance a lot this summer. God's abundance is being poured out. And I feel like that piece of it is a, is a new understanding. I take that to prayer in a different way.
Mm, those are some really beautiful words you just used. Thank you. Thank you for sharing about that. I remember when you first got the job, I was really, really excited and I wanted to hear more. So I'm glad that you were able to share more with us today. So, okay. So Sue, when I asked you if you would do this podcast, you did send me a little note that said that you were not afraid to talk about the controversies that are happening in the Catholic Church right now. And it's a hard time to be a religious person, I think. As everyone on the podcast knows, I was born into the Mormon Church and converted to Community of Christ 4 years ago. And recently, like the Catholic Church, a lot of scandals of sexual abuse and harassment and things like that, cover-ups have been coming out of the Mormon Church as well. And it's heavy stuff. And, you know, I'm one that does still have faith in organized religion, but these situations can make that faith more challenging and more difficult. So I guess because you said that you were willing to go there, let's go there.
Okay. Well, obviously, it is a very difficult time for the church.
Yeah.
There is a lot of sadness and anger and feelings of betrayal and hurt and disbelief. Just a huge spectrum of feelings that are sometimes not being acknowledged, not being honored. Everybody that I've talked to seems to have a different need or is approaching it from their own perspective, their own life, you know, experiences and such. And, you know, I honestly, things continue to come out, I'm actually starting to give thanks because this was a huge festering wound. And wherever there is abuse and wherever there is scandal, it's in the darkness. And I do a lot of, you know, is my life one that I'm living in the light or am I living in the dark? And I think we didn't realize the darkness that was in the church. You know, the church has this huge 2,000-year history. The church has had a history of saying, you know, the only way to heaven is through our doors. That changed with Vatican II. But there are still people who believe that this is the be-all, end-all of church and God and how to get to heaven. And that's not, you know, that's not what, for one thing, the Jesuits believe. That's not what Vatican II teaches. But I think as painful as this is, this good can come. God is in all of these hurt feelings, these feelings of betrayal and anger, and God is going to make something good of that. You know, there are people who have already left, said, I'm done with this. And that is certainly their choice. You know, and I think as the more that comes to the light, the more we can clean out this wound and see some, I hope, really substantial positive changes for our church. So that is, you know, where I am at today. That may change, but right now I'm still working for and with the church. You know, I've never been Catholic because of the Pope or the bishops or the priests. I've been Catholic for other reasons, for the sacramental nature, for our teachings on the saints and Mary and Eucharist and all of those things. Those things haven't changed. I do call forth, you know, to people to bring everything to the light. I hope what happened in Pittsburgh happens in every diocese around the world. Because I think that's the only way we're going to be able to move forward. That's the only way we're going to be able to heal and to, you know, to continue to be a credible source of faith for people who do want organized religion. And that too is a piece of it that's changing. I think you're right. Organized religion is struggling in all denominations right now.
Yeah, I think you bring up a good point. That by talking about this, you know, by not keeping it in the dark, not keeping it a secret, the church and the world and multiple churches, because again, this issue is wider and way bigger than the Catholic Church, and the Catholic Church is a big church. So, this is a human problem. This is a world problem. And I think that the more that we're able to talk about it, the more that we can address it. And like you said, clean out the wounds and heal and hold each other accountable hold our faith accountable. And I think that is good. It's hard. For me, I'm still not fully able to express my thoughts on the abuse that has come out of the Mormon church. And I was one that left, not because of that, but it actually has rattled me more than I care to admit, especially publicly. But I think that I am at a place now where, you know, I am grateful for the people that have stepped forward. And I am grateful that even if, and again, this is from a Mormon perspective, even if the Mormon leadership is not addressing it in a way that I would hope they would, that the people are, a large amount of people are starting to listen. And I've seen people that I did not expect to start questioning maybe some of the structural issues that kind of have fostered some of this abuse, that they are starting to question it, and that I'm hopeful that some amount of change can happen. It still is a pretty tender topic for me, but so I appreciate, you know, that you talked about bringing it out of the darkness is how we move forward and how we heal and how we address it.
That's the only way we can. And there has to be, I think, some sort of structural change. And I think if there isn't, then we haven't learned anything, you know, and I think we're back to square one. And I think we're going to see numbers decline. And once again, if that's what people need to do, that's what they need to do. But it's time. I feel like, you know, the time is here for that to be able to happen. And, you know, I always thought, you know, I would love to see women ordained, but I thought that's never going to happen in my lifetime. Well, now there's, while not discussion at the Vatican, there's still this undercurrent of it is time for this to happen. So I think whether it's that, you know, we go to that extreme, which I don't think the church will, I think we are, our voices are being raised, and they are voices of faith, and they are voices of love and hope. And it's, once again, just seeing how God's going to take that and use it and work with it is going to be an interesting part of this unfolding.
Yeah, exactly. I think that as more churchgoers find their voice and realize that their voice matters in this conversation, whether it's, you know, lobbying for change about ordination or structural changes and rules or relationships with priests or et cetera, you know, any of these things, the more that churchgoers, that members just continue these conversations and continue to make waves. You know, I'm hopeful that church leaders across denominations, just across the spectrum, across the board, will start listening. So
definitely. And church is changing. I mean, you know, it is dynamic. It is not a static institution, and change happens whether we want it to or not. And that is what I see happening in Christian denominations and well, especially in the Catholic Church right now.
Yeah. So I guess, which brings me to the question, what relevance do you think that church has today? If church is changing and society's changing, et cetera, you know, what keeps you, or what do you think should keep people engaged in church life, whether that's traditional church life or if it looks differently, whatever, just church life.
Yeah. Well, I think, you know, when we start being our own church, we start making God into our image. And I think we have, as we learned in seminary, this huge, huge wealth of knowledge from our desert mothers and fathers all the way up to the leaders in the, you know, 20th century theologians and such. So I think we need some sort of place where we can gather as community, place where we can be fed and nourished at the table in my tradition, and then a place that we can go out, we can understand, we can hear, we can listen, we can interact, and then we're sent to minister. So I think that's what church does, is it brings us together, it gives us a body of knowledge, new knowledge maybe, new ways of understanding God, Jesus, the Spirit, and then allows us to go forth and transform the world and be that change using God and be the change we wish to see in the world. But I think if we start going to an individualistic way of saying we're church, then I think we are going to be, like I say, making God in our image. And that's, I think I see some danger in that.
Yeah, I agree. But yeah, some churches and some congregations, they just kind of get stuck in the way of like, well, this is how we've always done it. Or, you know, they're unwilling to maybe reassess how they interpret scripture or how they interpret church history. And if they are used to doing church or being church or believing in church in a certain way, it can be really hard to break out of that box. And, but like you said, I think that the future of the church needs to be addressing those things and needs to be evolving. And my dog just whined, you know, not necessarily changing with the world, but just recognizing that God is in the world and how can we, you know, how can we meet God where God already is, which is an interesting but beautiful concept.
Yeah. You know, and I think people, you know, in the chaos that is the world, I think people who are stuck with this is the way it's always been, these are the rules, they need that, you know, and that is church too. You know, it's not an either or, it's a both and. I had a teacher once who said, when you encounter somebody who thinks differently than you, just make your tent bigger so you can welcome them. And that image has just been so helpful to me when I encounter somebody who is, you know, who wants to go back to pre-Vatican II times and have the mass in Latin and turn the altar and all of that. I think I just need to make my tent bigger because that allows me then to incorporate them and honor where they're at for whatever reason. So I don't know if, you know, if that is helpful or not, but I think church is many things to many people. And as long as the coming together and the sharing, you know, coming to the table for sharing, hearing scripture together, being, you know, together with people when there is loss, when there is tragedy in the world, you know, I think all religions are going to step up and help the people who are going to be hit by those hurricanes in the next 5 days. You know, it doesn't matter what religion you are, what color you are, people are going to, you know, be out there helping. And that is the church.
Oh, Sue, this is why I'm just so glad we're friends. There's just a wealth of wisdom there. I mean, you know, it's true. And sometimes I can, you know, be a millennial and get down on maybe more traditional church services or theology that I don't agree with. But you're right. It is a way to do church. It completely is. And I love what you said, you know, making your tent bigger, to just be an includer. And I know there's a saying that gets tossed around to several different authors, but it's basically when you draw a line between you and another person, that Jesus is always on the other side of the line. And I can still struggle with that sometimes, you know, as much as I, in Community of Christ, we have a couple hymns that are very inclusive, like all are welcome and for everyone born a place at the table. But there have been some people that have challenged, challenged right. My willingness to say that all are welcome. And, you know, I'm constantly having to check that, which is difficult. And we also in Community of Christ have this idea of blessings of community. And so sometimes I just remind myself and, you know, smile and say it out of the corner of my mouth, blessings of community. it can be challenging, but it's good. So thank you for that reminder. It's a good one.
Sure. You know, and I have just loved what I realized probably halfway through seminary was, you know, we shared the same first 1500 years. You know, we've only been slightly different since the Reformation and since that. And so, you know, that knowledge that we have this huge long history and this huge foundation together. And then there are so many ways. I mean, I think once again, God just opened up many because of the Catholic Church's issues back then at the time of the Reformation. God just opened up many other ways to to be church, to get to heaven, if you use that image. And one of the things that I've really loved about Community of Christ is you people can sing like nobody's business. There is just, you know, all the verses, everybody sings, and they are songs. I mean, we have All Are Welcome in a Place at the Table too, you know, in the Catholic Church, but also the most welcoming of all denominations, I think, that I've visited, just in terms of, I was able to go to a couple of Community of Christ services. Very different from Catholicism. And actually one person said, yeah, if you go to a different church, it'll probably look completely different. And that was like, whoa, how could, you know, we have set prayers that you can go to any church in the world and we're saying the same thing, which there's comfort in that. And there's also comfort in diversity, you know, so, but I love, love, love your mission initiatives and enduring principles. They're so inclusive and beautifully and thoughtfully constructed. They address the modern issues of today, and they don't carry with it the magisterium and the closed view, I guess. I think we're a little bit more open, but the way they are written, the enduring principles and mission initiatives are just, they speak to me. They really do. And, you know, I can look to the Catholic Church and see things with it similarly. But the wording is the striking thing for me that I really appreciate. So all of that I've learned in seminary and through, you know, all the my cohort and the people that I've met. So it's been such a wonderful gift. Such a wonderful.
Well, and I think you have been a wonderful gift. Truthfully, I do not know a whole lot of Catholics, which sounds so weird, but I live in suburbia, Utah, where
there's yeah, you might
on every corner.
So, right.
You know, and I had my own interpretation of what I thought Catholics were like. And, you know, then I meet you, Sue, and realize that there's actually a very wide range of Catholics and different beliefs within the Catholic umbrella that, you know, still all go back to the Vatican. And like you said, go back to 2,000 years of just this rich, rich, rich history. And that's one thing that I've really benefited from in seminary is understanding that, you know, church, as I know it, didn't start in 1830, that there's actually 1,500 years of, you know, just really, really rich theological discussion and debate and exploration and praying and worship. And that's been absolutely beautiful, and learning about the saints and just how much that history has actually impacted my theology today, even though I wouldn't have recognized it as such until I learned about it, which has been such a gift to me. And it's been really interesting to go through these classes with someone from the Catholic Church in the classes. Like, I've really, really enjoyed just our conversations and posts and everything. And this is turning into like a love letter for Community of Christ Seminary.
I know. Maybe we don't have to write our final paper if we finish this, like, just submit this.
I'll just turn in this podcast.
Exactly.
You're just great.
Well, thanks. I love you too. And I just love, like I say, so many, many things. We are, you know, church is not an either or, it's a both and. And I think, you know, God is present in just all of it, and calling us together and bringing us together, seeing that there are more similarities than there are differences. And, you know, I came into seminary thinking, okay, how are we different? How are we different? And it's like, not that different. You know, we are more alike. You know, we focus on different traditions because of our history, and yet the freshness and the newness of Community of Christ and other Protestant traditions is something we can learn from. And I think that's something that Francis has done, is said, you know, there's God's in all of this. It's not, you know, it's not just us. And that is refreshing. So.
Exactly. Well, thank you.
You are welcome. Thank you. This is an honor and a privilege, and I've been touched by just this whole experience, and it continues to be this glorious unfolding. of God's revealing God's self to this world and seeing God in one another. I really appreciate the ways that God manifests herself in you.
Oh, well, I feel the same way.
Virtual hug.
Yeah. Yay, virtual hug. Yeah, thank you. I've been so intrigued by just the social justice work that you've done and just how you really live your faith. You live your faith in a way that's just inspiring. And, you know, I look at my little congregation in Salt Lake and sometimes I think, man, what more could we do? And then I, you know, hear the list of what you guys are doing. And I'm assuming that you're quite a bit larger than, I was wondering about that. How big is your parish?
We are considered a destination parish because of the Jesuit theology. Many people come from we have people come from 75 miles away. We had somebody coming down a couple times a month from Iowa. So we draw from about, going back to the papers here that we did, we draw from about 75 zip codes. And granted, you know, we're in the South City, so there's a lot of zip codes, you know, right there. But we really do draw from a diverse group of places, South, North, East, West. And like I say, they come for that theology and that sense of justice and Jesuit core values. So it can be pretty diverse. You know, I don't think everybody comes every week, but it's definitely... I understand what they mean when they said destination parish, because it was, when I did that, it was just like, wow, people really do come and participate and, you know, believe in that Catholic social teaching and justice that are the core of what the Jesuits are about. So yeah, pretty amazing.
Yeah, it's really, really inspiring. Thank you for sharing.
Sure. Thanks so much for this opportunity. And, you know, I will continue to pray for Community of Christ, that your mission continues to expand and grow, and you know, pray for those intentions that you all hold, and for that time, you know, that Zion, you know, that we can all come together and sit at the table and be one and realize that the kingdom is right here, right now.
Exactly. Beautiful, beautiful.
Thanks for listening to Project Zion Podcast. Subscribe to our podcast on Apple Podcast, Stitcher, or whatever podcast streaming service you use, and while you are there, give us a 5-star rating. Project Zion Podcast is sponsored by Latter-day Seeker Ministries of Community of Christ. The views and opinions expressed in this episode are of those speaking and do not necessarily reflect the official policy or position of Latter-day Seeker Ministries or Community of Christ. The music has been graciously provided by Dave Hines.